Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the elusive Sunday night edition of the Boneyard. Got to get it up for you guys before I leave town in the morning. As I have shared, I've got a court appearance. Yeah, I'm not guilty of anything, but I once was. And so I've told you guys I'm trying to get that certificate of rehabilitation. And so I got to get up, head south, right? And so we got a lot to cover. I don't know how long we go. We'll see. But we'll get this up for you. So you will have my thoughts on Mississippi State's Major League Draft results. We'll take another football preview. And we'll just see how things go. Yeah. But good results. Yeah, good results. Spoke to Brian O'Connor earlier this evening. That story is available at jeanspage.com. His first public comments after the draft went final. Just minutes after the final pick was made, we had Coach on the phone and shared his immediate thoughts about that. And again, if you're a Jeans Page subscriber, you can go read that right now, and you should. And if you're not a subscriber, you certainly should be. So we share that with you just because of the fact that we've got a lot to cover. Format today, layout may be a little different just because we got a lot going on. It's been a long day. Here, long day. Got to cover the draft, transcribe an interview with O'Connor, put a notebook up, kind of talk about a few things, about kind of recapping the draft. We're going to do that for you here too. But nevertheless, I think we're in a good position. I think we are probably slightly better than we hoped to be. And if you followed my reporting for the last 2 weeks, it pretty much went to script with one positive development that maybe we didn't fully anticipate until today. So there we go. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company, and we have for a long time. I suspect that we will continue to love them because they love us right back. They give us what we pay for and then some. A lot of places out there continue to kind of raise their prices, and they're giving you less, right? They charge you more, give you a smaller portion, and then the service is just kind of like, you know, whatever. It's just average. That's not what you get at Bulldog Burger Company. Man, they've been doing this a long time. They know how to give you exemplary service and a great product at a great price in a great atmosphere. That's one of the reasons that we keep coming back. When you're craving a burger, and I know you are a lot, Bulldog Burger Company is the only place to go. Whether you're in town or on the way to town, there is a Bulldog Burger Company location to service you. University Drive here in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's on the menu. It is. It's true. And then get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. And if you're not feeling like a burger and everybody else is, let me recommend the BLT salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not going to judge you for it. You eat it the way you want to. It's your life. Live it more abundantly. One of the things I love about Bulldog Burger Company, too, is I can just go put my feet under their table, and I'm going to get so incredibly well cared for. It's going to keep me coming back. And again, they've kind of perfected the to-go order too. So if you're in a hurry, grab some Bulldog Burger Company to-go. They'll have it so incredibly well packaged for you, you won't get home with a big sloppy mess. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, let's start with current players, Bulldogs from the 2026 roster. Guys, we had 14 players from the roster that were draft eligible. Now, and let's be brutally honest with ourselves, right? If we can't be honest on the Boneyard, we can't be honest anywhere. This was not an overly talented team as far as the veterans go, okay? At least not from a pro baseball standpoint. And that's where we're trying to get. Like, we want draft weekend to be a celebration of Mississippi State baseball. And we have plenty to celebrate this weekend. But some of the bigger celebrations came on the guys that are coming to school. We want to have multiple players every single year that are being drafted at a high level, because ultimately that's the goal of every recruit that comes here. They want to come here, spend 3 years or so, develop, and then head on to the minors and eventually the major leagues. That's the goal of every aspiring young ball player. So in order for us to ensure that we continue to recruit at an exceptionally high level, we've got to show them that the pathway to the show runs through Starkville, Mississippi. We'll start with our first selection of the draft, signee and returning player Ace Reese. Probably went a little bit lower than many people anticipated, but still a first rounder, our 21st first rounder in program history. 24th pick in the draft, the Seattle Mariners, and they clearly like us, took Ace. And again, I think they were probably surprised he was still there. There were some people forecasting he could go as high as 11 to the Nationals, but most people had him in the mid to late teens, and he slips to the mid-20s. Probably cost him a little coin. The slot value for this is $3.82 million. It's already a report that he agreed to terms, $3.5 million. So the Mariners can then bank that $320,000 and use that to pay over slot to other players. A lot of people have no idea what I'm talking about when we say slot. For every pick in the draft, there is a slot value associated with that. It's the structure for what the suggested bonus should be for that particular pick. When a guy signs over slot, that means that he was paid more than the value of that spot in the draft. When he's under, you kind of can do the math, right? But when you go under slot, you can keep that money in your bonus pool. And so maybe you've got a guy that maybe his slot value was $300,000. Well, now you can give him $500,000. So Ace signs for them, and he's a very rich man today, but also, too, the Mariners were able to kind of pocket a little coin there to help them bring in some players around him. Ben Davis, we mentioned in our final report that Ben Davis was expected to go early on day two but could slip into the back end of day one. Well, that's what happens. The 104th pick in the draft to the Colorado Rockies. Now, because of the fact Ben is a senior, he is not expected to finish anywhere close to slot value, which for this pick is $755,300. He won't get anywhere close to that. He's what you call a senior saver because he has no leverage. He can't threaten to go back to school and like, okay, fine, we'll give you the full slot value. Can't do it. And some would say, Steve, what about the 5 for 5? Well, there's just too much to litigate. You can't bank your future on that. So maybe he gets $100,000, maybe. And then they pocket that other $655 to spend somewhere else. Now, what's interesting about this, too, so Ben Davis and he has good representation. Like, he could have been a situation where he's like, hey, you know, I'm already getting calls from other teams. They're willing to pay me X. If you guys will beat that, then I'll agree to terms and we can go ahead and put the pick in. And I suspect that's what happened there. So, yeah, Ben Davis, a fourth rounder. You know, like Jake Mangum, you know, kept, you know, turning down the draft and coming back. And as a senior, like he went for like 15 grand, something like that. I mean, it wasn't much. It was well under slot, even though it was a top 10 pick. In the 10th round, Bryce Chance. And what a great story this is, right? Bryce Chance, former walk-on at Mississippi State, a young man that grew up cheering for Mississippi State. His dad, obviously, involved with our basketball crew as far as, you know, game day management. Bryce, also a senior, a fifth-year senior. Slot value is $191,000 and change, almost $192,000. He won't get anywhere close to that. But the reality of it is Bryce Chance is a guy that if you are a young ball player and you were looking for somebody to mimic your game after, this is the guy. Every single year, our fans, a small segment, said, "Hey, we're gonna recruit over him. We're gonna recruit over him." But Bryce refused. Bryce continued to work hard. And if I had told you at the beginning of the year that Bryce Chance is going to be pretty much your everyday center fielder in postseason, you wouldn't have believed it. And one of the reasons you wouldn't have believed it is because Aiden Teal was on the team. Aiden Teal got drafted in the 11th round, the 317th pick, to the Minnesota Twins. There is no slot value through rounds 11 through 20. But for players like him, they actually list him as a four-year senior. He's not. He is a redshirt junior. So he will get $150,000 at a minimum because he has leverage to work with. And so $150,000, he may get a little bit more. But, you know, rounds 11 through 20, you pay guys $150,000 or less, and it doesn't count against your bonus pool. Right, and so you can afford to give guys the full value. Connor Hizek was a senior, and he got full $150,000 deal too. And look what he's doing in the minors. And then Brandon Sweeney was a senior, went undrafted. Chris Billingsley, who transferred to Coastal, went undrafted. Dane Burns transferred to Auburn undrafted. Maddox Webb undrafted. Noah Sullivan, I mean, I hate that one, I really do. Undrafted. Patrick Spencer was a draft-eligible player, too, transferred to Southeastern Louisiana. Peyton Fowler, transferred to South Alabama, also draft-eligible. Reed Stallman, probably the biggest surprise to me. I thought Reed would get picked up somewhere late. Tyler Pitzer, transferred to South Carolina. And then Vito Valinkas. Eligibility's done. And he said as much earlier this year. He goes, "I don't know how much more baseball I got left. I got to enjoy every bit of this." But yeah, some of these guys that went in the portal, obviously, you know, they will get some NIL money probably comparable to what they would have gotten had they been drafted in the back half of the draft. And so as a result, it's like, hey, I get 150 grand now, play another year of college ball, 5 for 5's kicked in, I've got leverage for next year, and then maybe I get $150,000 next year too. You know, or you could be a guy, because you have leverage through 5 for 5, maybe it's a scenario where you take some NIL money now and you turn yourself into from a $150,000 guy to maybe a $300,000 guy next year. So that's important to understand. Now, on the flip side of this, we have our signees to talk about. The first signee that went was Rocco Maniscalco at pick number 50 to the St. Louis Cardinals. And again, I shared this with you guys because I love you. I mean, I got to tell you the truth. You know, guys don't reclass in baseball to come to college. They may ultimately come to college if they don't get what they want out of the draft. But guys reclass in baseball to become draft eligible. In football, it's different. Like, you reclass in football because you want to be able to get there early, maybe take a redshirt year, get bigger, faster, stronger, because there's no high school football draft, and nor should there be. You see some guys that will reclass at times in basketball, too, because they want to be a one and done. But in baseball, it's completely different. Rocco, the son of former Mississippi State shortstop legend, Matthew Maniscalco, slot value of $1.98 million, and I was told prior to the draft that he was expected, you know, around $2 million. Well, he's right there on it. Right there on it. And, you know, be interesting to see what he signs for, but yes, we do expect him to sign. Moving to the fourth round here, Will Brick, one of the last players selected on day one. He goes in the fourth round to the Blue Jays with a slot value of $581,000 and change. Now, I was told he had a signing bonus amount of around $1 million. And so, again, you begin to look at the Toronto Blue Jays draft. And let's do that together, shall we? Because I want to break this thing down for you, because there is a little bit of magic math that goes with this. So Nolan Higgins was drafted right after Will Brick. Well, he's a senior. Gabe Mitchell, right behind him, he's a senior. And then, of course, you get Jake Bennett, a catcher from Dallas Baptist, a senior. Joey Urban, outfielder from Southern Miss, a senior. Bryce Chance, of course, a senior. So you look at this thing and you begin to kind of run it back here. You had a bunch of senior savers that you drafted after Will Brick. And you start running the numbers here, like Higgins, $421,000 signing bonus, slot value. Not going to get that. Gabe Mitchell, $330,000 and change. Not going to get that. Jake Bennett, $219,000. Not going to get that. Joey Urban, $202,000. Not going to get it. And Bryce Chance, of course, $192,000. Not going to get it. And so Will Brick will be paid well over slot, and that's where the savings comes in. They get Will Brick, and then they begin to make some picks that make sense for them financially to save money in the bonus pool to overpay him. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. You know, on this show, we talk about a lot of complicated issues, and you know that I'm a believer in taking care of your mental health. Just about everybody agrees that mental health should be a priority, but it still makes it tough to ask for help sometimes. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma Report surveyed 2,000 Americans. They revealed that 85% of Americans believe that getting help is wise. But for some reason, about 74% say society discourages people from doing so. Don't let that happen to you. The reality of it is that sometimes we all need a little bit of a helping hand. And you can find it with BetterHelp.com. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people around the world. It works. Got an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Don't let stigma stand in the way of your support in a better life. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up today and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. And so when you start, you know, kind of running the numbers here and just think, We ran all these seniors for you. There were, what, five seniors that were drafted after Will Brick? You save $100,000 on each of them at a minimum. Well, you can give Will Brick almost $1.1 million. And so some people look at this and they think, oh, well, slot value is only 581. Maybe he'll come. Guys, everybody drafted in the first 10 rounds is expected to sign. I have beat that in the head for years now for people, and for some reason, we just don't seem to understand it. We don't get it. Guys, history and the collective bargaining agreement since the draft rules changed back in 21 have shown us this is what happens because teams are penalized for not signing players drafted in top 10 rounds. It's not just, well, hey, that's the slot value. Then maybe he'll make a decision. No, they get creative because they will do what it takes to ensure that they're not penalized in next year's draft. That's what happens. And I've written it, I've tweeted it, and people are like, well, Steve, what do you think? Is he going to come? No, he's not coming. He's not coming. Well, we'll see. Guys, I'm explaining to this to you in the most gentle language I can. I don't speak any other languages. I don't know how else to explain it, to borrow a phrase from Bubba Sparks. Guys drafted in the fourth round are going to sign. Period. Let's get to another, shall we? Martin Sheeler. And I think I was the first person in the country to put out that he was expected to sign. He was leaning towards signing. And again, most of the people on our board are like, oh, man, that sucks. I hate it so bad. But now here we are, right? And so I run this for you because it's important for you to understand. Okay, Jake Scheffner from North Carolina, shortstop, was the first round pick from the Boston Red Sox. Now, if you remember, Eli Willits last year was like a surprise number one pick. And it's because they were basically going to pay him where he projected. That's what's going to happen here with Jake Scheffner. He was projected to be the number 75 player in the draft. Okay? Are we together on that? He was the number 20 pick in the draft. So what you do is you tell his agent, it's like, hey, we really like Jake, and we want to spend our first round pick on him. However, we'll wait to the third round if we have to. But we are committed to Jake, but we have got to generate some savings to ensure that we can, you know, fill out our roster in the minor leagues. And so we're going to be able to take him, but we've got to have an agreement in principle that he's going to sign for way less than slot. Now, what I'm told is Jake agreed to terms at $1.9 million. The slot value is $4.37 million. So that's 2.3, nearly 2.4 in savings. And so the 75th pick in a draft was the last pick in the second round, right? And so I'm not trying to go too fast here, but so they take a guy that is basically a late second rounder, early third rounder, and they draft him with pick number 20. And the whole point of that is, hey, we're going to get a quality shortstop, but we're going to save some money so we can be very aggressive with other players. Well, that's what they've done. So then, again, you start running the math on this, right? A lot of other people are just kind of right there at their projections. Like, it's so incredible. Owen Hall from North Carolina, projected to be the 67th pick in the draft. He was the 67th pick in the draft. Incredible. Then you get to Jace Matuszynski, drafted a little bit high, a little bit, but he's a high school senior. So in order to get him, you're probably going to have to pay full slot or a little bit over slot. Well, you can because you've got all the savings. Then we get to Lucas Davenport from Baylor, who wasn't even ranked in the 250. They take him, obviously, as a senior. Well, he didn't have any leverage. Slot value for that pick is over $450,000. Well, it's kind of like the Bryce Chance thing, the Ben Davis thing. Okay, well, we'll give you $50,000 or $100,000. We'll pocket that money. And then you go down a little bit deeper here, you get to Martin Sheeler, who has a slot value of $205,000. And then, Casual Fan 1.0 gets on Facebook and says, hey, well, slot value is only $205,000. Maybe he'll come. No, he's not coming. But, Steve, you don't know. Well, I understand the process, and clearly you don't. And I'm not trying to be arrogant about this. I'm trying to be informative and educational and entertaining. Everybody drafted in the first 10 rounds is expected to sign, period. Do you remember when Blaze was coming out? And all of a sudden, he kind of began to slip. Remember that? And thinking, man, maybe we get him. Well, then the Red Sox take him. Well, the Red Sox had a bunch of money, and they put a deal together similar to this one to ensure that they got him. And now he's in the big leagues with the Cardinals. Martin Seigler was projected as the number 175 player in the draft. He went at pick 274. Wanted north of $1 million. And even when we were, you know, before, he was like slot value around 330. People are telling me, dude, he wants to sign. He wants to sign. And I said, he'll sign for that lowest slot value. He said, maybe. But he had a good combine, and he's probably going to get closer to seven figures. The right team just has to come along. And that's what happened here. The right team came along and put a deal in place that made a lot of sense. Right? And a lot of times you tell these teams, through your agent, hey, I'd really like to go to this team. If they can put a deal together for me, I'll go with them. I'll tell everybody else no. And that's why you have an agent. And so Martin Seigler is not going to sign for $205,000. But I've seen it. I've seen it. John Q. Facebook fan. Well, Steve, when you begin to work out the commission for the agent and the taxes and everything else, it's not a lot of money. We could give him as much NIL money as that. We're not giving him $1 million a freshman. Okay? That's the reality of the situation. And there's so many people, like, and I'm saying this with as much love as I can because it's very frustrating. If you're not subscribed to jeanspage.com, you really shouldn't be out here commenting on Facebook about this kind of stuff. I'm just going to lay it out there for you. You shouldn't be. Because you're embarrassing yourself. And then you're confusing other fans. So if you really want to know, then come climb on board. And then in the 10 days leading up to the draft, we will give you so much information about what we're hearing and how this process works. You won't have to wonder. You won't say, hey, man, what do you think? Is he going to come to school? No, he's not. Because the Boston Red Sox were smart in what they did to ensure when they took him, they had the money to pay his asking price, period. Now, the good thing is we did have Denton Lord drafted in the 17th round by the Padres, and that's basically a skip pick. I tried to explain that to you guys too. You can't just skip a pick, right? It's basically a throwaway pick. It's like, hey, it's our turn to pick in this draft. We don't have any bonus pool money left, at least not enough to sign this kid. We're going to go take a kid that we know is going to go to school. And maybe we have a conversation and we're going to be following you. You know, that's, you take a flyer on those kids, right? But mainly it's just to move the draft on. You can't just say, hey, we're not going to pick anymore. You got to pick a kid. You have to. Denton Lord, when he was picked, was already packing the car to come and start. He'll be here tomorrow. He'll be here Monday. And so, nothing to worry about, kind of like Jacob Parker last year, being drafted by the Diamondbacks. And then, of course, back in 22, Gerangelo was drafted late by the Brewers. And that's just what happens. You know. And again, if you're unfamiliar with the process, you're like, oh, holy smokes, our kid got drafted. Is he going to come to school? Well, in this case, yes. Yes. Because Denton Lord is a guy that's a potential first-rounder and certainly a first-day guy. He's a guy that will probably command – $1 million plus in a couple years, if not more, right? So, yeah, he's not going to go sign for $150,000. Now, of course, there's situations like we saw with David Mershon after the 24 draft, right? David Mershon, they take a flyer on David because they like David. And David's asking price is around $500,000. And they take him and they just kind of park him there. And then Ryan Prager doesn't sign. So they had offered Ryan Prager full slot plus everything left in the bonus pool. And Prager didn't sign. Went back to A&M. So then they lose the slot value, but they retain all the surplus left in the bonus pool. They use that additional $350,000, $400,000 left to sign David Mershon. Again, there is some creative arithmetic that goes with this, knowing how to manage your bonus pool. Incredibly important. And so I hope that I have explained this in a way that makes a lot of sense to you. I hope. That was my intention today. The rest of the thing is we had 8 high school signees that were invited to the MLB Combine. And I know everybody in the media has covered that over and over and over. And we felt like, hey, we had to get at least 4 of the 8 to feel good about our class. We get 5. because Landon Brown, who was the number 77 player in the talent pool, according to MLB.com, did not have a team willing to hit his asking price. And so he basically told his agent, hey, I'm done, I'm going to school. And so now here we are. When I traded text messages with Wilson Anderson, he was already on the flight. Draft wasn't even over. And he was already on a plane on his way to Starkville, Mississippi. When I text Jake Carbaugh, he was already in the car on his way to Starkville, Mississippi. The draft wasn't even over. And so we were able to get those stories out there for you guys, you know, before the draft ended. And one of the reasons we do that, number one, is if all you see is a signee got drafted, you just kind of assume that, oh, my gosh, our class is falling apart. Well, we wanted to kind of counterbalance that. And number one, remove your anxiety, one, worrying about these guys, because then you get quotes directly from them how excited they are to come to Mississippi State. So we have done incredibly well with the draft. And again, we had to get four of the eight. I mean, three of the eight would have been devastating. We had to get four of the eight. We hoped to get five. And man, when we were greedy, we're thinking, man, maybe we can get six. Maybe. And before we found out that Martin Sheeler was leaning towards signing, we thought maybe we'd only lose Will Brick and Rocco Maniscalco. We thought that was the best case scenario, that we get six. Ultimate scenario was to get six. Once you find out about Sheeler, you think, well, now best case becomes five. Four of the eight's got to be what you want. Now, we've got a bunch of other good players, too, that got calls from teams that didn't go to the MLB Combine, right? So we have a very talented class. It'll be interesting to see what the perfect game rankings look like for what that's worth once these guys sign. The guys that were drafted have until 4 p.m. Central, Monday, July 27th, to sign a contract or go to school. That's it. And so you got basically 2 weeks to figure this stuff out. And so there's really nothing for us to track. In recent years, we've had to kind of figure this thing out. Last year, not so much, right? Because, you know, you take Landon Harmon and JoJo Parker very early in the first 10 rounds. Well, we know those guys are going to sign. Then you look at, you know, Jacob Parker, you know, after he got picked, I interviewed him. He goes, I didn't even know I got picked until I did, right? And it was just crazy. But so there's not going to be a lot for us to report about draft signings except until they do, right? It's just we're not sitting here waiting for Rocco Maniscalco to say, guys, I made a mistake. Let me come, right? Same thing with Will Brick, right? And certainly Martin Sheeler. And again, we're proud of our reporting. And the one thing I'm happy to be wrong about is I forecasted Landon Brown to sign. And getting him in is huge. And the fact that it's all these pitchers, right? I don't think any of you guys right now are worried about what we're going to look like offensively. And all due respect to Will Brick and Rocco Maniscalco, they weren't going to make us better next year. They weren't. Not offensively. Now, Will Brick and Rocco are elite defenders, which is one of the reasons they got drafted on day one, right? But the reality of it is, you know, the jump to dealing with SEC pitching and things like that, they're probably a year away from being able to help us, maybe in 28. So offensively, you're going to be in good shape anyway. However, you know, you guys all know we needed more pitching. And like I saw some people on the board kind of talking about, you know, pitching. Yeah, I would rather have this guy. Guys, you can never have too much pitching. And how many times this year did we just wish we had one more pitcher or two more pitchers? I can think of the series at Texas and Texas A&M to say, you know, just right at the gate. It's off the top of my head. I wish I'd have had a couple more pitchers. And these dudes are legit. Again, these guys were invited to the MLB Combine because the pro teams felt they had pro potential right now in high school. And we brought those guys to campus. And again, you begin to kind of work through this. Every pitcher that Justin Parker and Brian O'Connor signed this year, whether it be from the transfer portal or the high school ranks, they're all coming to school. So you wanted to renovate the bullpen and kind of upgrade and get ready for your weekend rotation in the future? You've done that. That's a big box that's been checked. You lose three position players in the draft, and they're all great players, but they weren't guys that were going to make you a better team this year. That's so important to know. All right, we'll get back to our top 10 list on Wednesday. We'll do our college football preview brought to you by CloseWithBlair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. His phone number, since we're all friends, you should have it. 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Get his 25 years of expertise and know-how working for you. Whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo you so coveted, Blair can make those dreams a reality. Yeah. He knows how to construct loans to give you the best chance for approval. So rather than just kind of bank on somebody else, maybe you don't know, that's not quite as proven, just stick with a winner. Stick with Blair Chandler at CloseWithBlair.com. All right. As we continue our journey into Mississippi State football season, next team opponent schedule is Vanderbilt. And I know you guys are excited about that. It's not the Vanderbilt of old, though. You remember when we went to Nashville here a few years ago, we took over that stadium, had more Mississippi State fans there than Vanderbilt. Not the case anymore. They're back on the schedule again. Looking back at last year, it was a special season for Vanderbilt, and they thought that, hey, maybe they could be a playoff team. Didn't work out that way for them. They went 10-3, 7-0 at home, though. That's impressive. And then 3-2 in road games, and then, of course, they lose the bowl game. Let's just kind of run it back. They knocked off Charleston Southern 45-3 and then went into Blacksburg. Now, granted, there was change before Virginia Tech was done last year, but they beat them 44-20. It was really after that game people were like, dude, I think I'm done, right? They went to South Carolina, and they took care of the Gamecocks 31-7. So, again, that's two road wins the first 3 weeks of the year. You feel awfully good about life, especially when you've still got some pretty good non-conference games left. They get Georgia State 70-21, and then Utah State, the Aggies, roll into Nashville and get beat 55-35. So if you're Vandy, you're feeling absolutely outstanding. You're 5-0 headed to Tuscaloosa. Well, didn't work out quite the way they wanted to, but I don't know if you guys remember this game. I remember when it was over with, like Alabama fans like trash-talking Diego Pavia. I mean, just like out of this going crazy. And I think, how far has Alabama fallen, but how far has Vanderbilt risen for that moment to happen? It was 14-0 at the break. Alabama takes a 20-14 lead into the fourth quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, after a pair of Connor Talty field goals, he adds another to make it a 23-14 game. And then from there, they just couldn't get anything else going. They tack on a touchdown late to put it away. But it was a competitive game, right? Probably one of the more competitive games Vandy's played against Alabama for years. Alabama always had Vandy on the schedule. Maybe you guys have forgotten. That was always the case. Of course, it reminds me, too, one of the great rivalries in the history of college football, the Bowtie Bowl between Ole Miss and Vandy no longer happens. I think they should be permanent opponents. It's my feeling. After an open date, they knocked off LSU in Nashville 31-24. And, again, that's a game, too, that a lot of people, I think, probably have forgotten. If you're looking for some football to watch this summer, maybe go back and watch some of these games that you're not quite as familiar with. But, man, this was a barn burner of a game. At the break, it's 17-13 Vandy. And then in the third quarter, Vanderbilt just kind of takes control. LSU kicks a field goal in the fourth quarter. With 11:39 to go to make it a one-score game, but the Vandy defense stood tall and just wouldn't let LSU do anything else down the stretch. So that was a good win. Even though it wasn't a great LSU team, it's a good win. One of the biggest wins of the year, though, happened in Nashville against Missouri. 17-10 is your final. And, you know, of course, Mizzou loses their starting quarterback in this game right there at the goal line. Just kind of a crazy thing that happened. But it was a defensive battle from two teams that had put up a lot of offensive numbers, and Vandy comes out on top. Then they go to Texas, and again, great game here. Great game. And I don't think we were anticipating this being quite what it was, even though Vanderbilt was game for just about anything last year. But Texas jumps all over them, 17-0. You think, man, this game is over. No, it wasn't. Second quarter, Vandy outscores them 10-7, so it's 24-10 heading into halftime. And then in the third quarter, it seems like Texas has taken full control. They outscore them 10-0 in the third quarter. It's 34-10. The game is over, right? No, it's not over. Vanderbilt scores three touchdowns in the fourth and just couldn't get the onside kick, and who knows what would have happened, but they lose 34-30. So, again, very entertaining game. Again, if you're looking for something to watch that maybe you missed when you were watching maybe some more important games last year, another wild game involving the Commodores at Auburn. And they win that game in overtime 45-38. And I remember listening to that game. I can't remember where we were playing. We were listening to it on the way back. And they found a way to get it done. Another open date, and then they get Kentucky in Nashville, and they smash the Wildcats 45-17. I don't know that anybody expected that. You know, Kentucky had kind of started showing little signs of life, and then they get crushed. And then they march into Knoxville, do the Commodores, and they beat Tennessee 45-24. And you know as well as I do, there is nobody Vanderbilt enjoys more beating to defeat than Tennessee. And then they get in the ReliaQuest Bowl, and they get beat by Iowa 34-27. So, again, you look back at these games. Like, the one thing that Vandy avoided last year was, like, the really non-competitive loss. Yeah, I know that Alabama ended up kind of winning that game with a little margin to it. But, again, it was a competitive game. I mean, 30-14, that's Alabama kind of removing all doubt late. But that was an entertaining team. Was Vanderbilt Commodores. And now they've lost a lot as they begin to move into 2026. So let's take a look at the 26 schedule. Then we'll look inside the numbers just a little bit here. They open up with a home date against Austin Peay. Let's go, Peay. And then the Blue Hens of Delaware will come in. And then NC State. So there's your Power 5 mandate. And then from there, it's nine straight SEC games. They travel to Auburn, which could be a little dicey this go-around. They go to Georgia. Then they host Ole Miss. So, I mean, the rivalry game is back on, and they're trying to decide if it's going to be the CBS game or, you know, ESPN proper at night. We'll see how the teams look. Used to be an 11 a.m. or an 8 p.m. classic. October the 17th, the Commodores will host Arkansas. Then they travel to Lexington. Open date, road game at Mississippi State, host Alabama, travel to Florida, and then host Tennessee. So while the first half of this schedule, I said the first half is probably being generous, right? Because in that road trip to Auburn, I don't think it's going to be a joke. And certainly that trip to Georgia is not going to be a joke. But the second half of the schedule, you feel like, okay, there's some winnable games in the middle. But down the stretch, you're going to close it out with road games at Mississippi State, home at Bama, home against Bama, at the Swamp, and then home against Tennessee. So you could see a scenario where they lose the last four of those games. So that's why this, you know, this stretch here in October is so incredibly important for them. Just because of the fact, before they get that open date, they got some games they probably feel like they should win. But the one thing they can ill afford to do is lose to NC State. And the reason that I say that is because I think it's going to be difficult this year to replicate anything close to what you had last year without the magic man, Diego Pavia, of course, who was a Heisman finalist. Now, Clark Lea and those guys have done a great job. And anybody that suggests otherwise is just kind of being disingenuous. Absolutely outstanding job. And again, Clark Lea, you know, again, I give them a lot of credit for sticking with him. Granted, he is a Vanderbilt alum, and when he had that press conference and said, hey, we're going to go compete for national championships, we all snickered. We all snickered. And there was an opportunity last year for them to make the playoffs, and they just let a couple games get away from them. But you go back and look at this. Year one was 2021. They went 2-10. Did not win an SEC game. In 22, 5-7, they won a couple. And then they regressed. In 23, 2-10, and buckshot in the SEC. They rally in 24, win some games, 3-5 in the league, but 7-6. They win the Birmingham Bowl to get a winning season for the first time in a while. And then last year, of course, they're building towards something significant. They win 10 games and finish in the top 15. Now, I don't know if you guys have kind of kept up with what they have done over the years at Vanderbilt. Probably not, you know. Like, they haven't won a conference championship since 1921, right? We've won one since they have. But when you start running through this and begin to kind of recognize the fact that what's happening now is pretty special. I mean, you start counting it down here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They've had 11 bowl games in their history. Yeah. Not many, right? And then you remember the Derek Mason years, how incredibly poor they came very, very quickly. And a lot of people thought, hey, you know what? This is a mistake. But I don't know how you could go with it. They go 27-55. And that's including, you know, having to vacate those games in 2020. And then Derek Mason got the head coaching job at Middle Tennessee, and he went 6-18 in 2 years. So maybe Derek Mason needs to stick to being a defensive coordinator. Never won a bowl game. Again, he was at Vandy from 14 through 20. A lot of people thought they wouldn't fire anybody in 20. Well, they did. There were some problems there. But, yeah, what Clark Lea is doing there in many respects is probably, outside of James Franklin, largely unprecedented at Vanderbilt. And I think that's probably fair to say. I don't know anybody could disagree. But, you know, we talk about the bowl games. But, you know, way back in, you know, pre-World War II era, they had a handful of undefeated seasons. But, you know, we didn't have a lot of bowl games back then. The first one came for them in 1955. They actually played Auburn in the Gator Bowl. But Clark Lea, again, doing a great job there. Let's look inside the numbers here. If we can find them on this website, there's just so much sometimes. Like, sometimes we get too cute on these websites. It's just my personal opinion. Maybe you see it differently. But, you know, I don't need to be wowed with the website. Just let me find the information. I know you guys probably feel the same way. But looking back at last year, and again, they won 10 games. And that's the thing, too. Like, if you feel like I do, it's like, dude, if Ole Miss can go to the playoffs, then so can we. If Vanderbilt can win 10 games in a modern NIL era, then so can we. I just don't buy all this poor old state stuff. If they can figure it out, we can figure it out. But, man, what a great offense they had last year. Over 6,000 yards of offense, scored 66 touchdowns against 34. Hey, when you're almost doubling up your opponents in touchdowns, you're going to win a lot of games. And again, so many of these games were incredibly competitive. 287 yards through the air. They averaged giving up like 250. And, you know, passing was, you know, about even. And again, you factor in the non-conference stuff. But the strength of this was the rushing game. They netted almost 2,300 yards and outrushed their opponents by nearly 900 yards. 175 per game, allowing 108. 35 rushing touchdowns, allowed just 10. And that's the marquee of Clark Lea, you know, former linebacker. You know, hey, we're going to make you kick field goals. And they did. You know, even against Alabama, they had to – Alabama kicked, what, 3 field goals in that game? That's Alabama. And granted, it wasn't a great Alabama team, but they made the playoffs. Third down conversions, this is ridiculous. 51% for the Vanderbilt offense. They gave up 43, but man, that's an outstanding number. And then 10 of 19 on fourth down. Pretty impressive. They only fumbled 8 times last year. Lost 4 of them, but 8 fumbles, that's getting it done. They forced 14. 31 sacks, 4 and 24 against, and that helps when you got a mobile quarterback like Diego Pavia. Looking at the red zone numbers here, they were in the red zone 60 times, scored 45 touchdowns. Their opponents just 43 times in the red zone, 24 touchdowns. So 19 times you went to the red zone, you had to attempt a field goal. Yeah, pretty impressive. It is. 312 first downs and 258. They only missed one field goal last year. Wouldn't that be great? Like, if you're going to be in competitive games, you got to convert on special teams. And they did. And again, a lot more touchdowns than field goal attempts. But, yeah, pretty impressive stuff. Averaged 38.5 points a game. Gave up just 23 points a game. That's a differential. It's always good. It helps when you're scoring 70 points in non-conference games. But, again, we ran down the numbers on the schedule, and you can see this is not the Vanderbilt team of old. Look at some individual numbers. And, again, a lot of this is going to change. But Diego Pavia is the reason he was a Heisman candidate. 29 touchdowns against 8 picks, 3,539 yards through the air, 272 yards per game. And, again, they played some younger guys too, but, I mean, the numbers were just minuscule, right? I mean, they only had 12 completions outside of those, and only 22 attempts. On the rushing side of things, Diego was the leading rusher for Vanderbilt. And obviously that's because things break down at times and you need a guy that can make plays with his legs. They had some design quarterback runs, but guys, he had 167 attempts. And I'm just kind of guessing here. I would venture to say a lot of those just quarterback reads and just, hey, I can go get the first down, and they did. But 862 yards from your quarterback, that's pretty impressive. It is. The second leading rusher was Cedric Alexander, 567 yards, but he averaged about 43 yards per game. But again, they just kind of did it by committee. But it was, you know, Mekalen Young and Cedric Alexander were a pretty good tandem that combined to rush for about 1,000 yards, and then Pavia, 862 by himself. And so, yeah, that dog will hunt, right? Trey Richardson, big year for him last year, 806 yards on 46 grabs, 7 touchdowns. Junior Sherrill, what a good year as well. But, again, how much of that is guys working back to the quarterback, right? When things break down and you got a quarterback that's as magical as Diego Pavia, how much of that really kind of factors in? Guys working back to the quarterback when things break down. It's you know, just kind of the reality of life. Brian Logwell and C.J. Hurd, former Mississippi State recruit C.J. Hurd, flipped from Vandy to us and then flipped back to Vandy, second leading or tied for the leading as leading tackler up there. This is a younger guy too. Wouldn't saw him play. But, yeah, they're going to return some pieces, obviously. And, yeah, I remember how upset we were when we lost C.J. Hurd, and now you hear those numbers, you hate it even more. And I think that's a fair assessment of kind of what things look like, you know, for these guys. But, you know, the question is going to be with everything is how much of it was Clark Lee and his staff and how much of it was having a special player like Diego Pavia? Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think Clark Lee has instilled a really good culture up there, and they have put a great defense on the field. I say great, but a really good defense on the field, especially inside the 20. But then you got a guy that's a big eraser on offense. Like, maybe you get the wrong play call in and they can't get him on the ground. And so that's a significant part of this, is can they improvise without him? And I would suspect probably not. But they've got some dudes, right? We mentioned Cheryl. He's back. Bryson Coleman should be a good player for them. Cole Adams transferred in from Alabama. So they're going to have some guys that can get down the field. Cedric Alexander, we mentioned him. He's back. Probably we'll see. Really, him and Young both are back. So, you know, the tandem is there, and that'll take some weight off a young quarterback. But, Jared Curtis, highly recruited guy, not a lot of reps, right? And so, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, guy's got to get some reps, got to get in the weight room. At least he's got some running backs to serve as a security blanket, but some talented players. And, Stowers, of course, off of the NFL. But Cole Spence is back, and that's an experienced guy too. And you know, what's the best thing for a young quarterback is a valuable tight end. You know, as Jason Witten showed at Dallas when Dak was there, you know, All else fails, find the tight end. But, looking at this defense, again, they're going to return a lot of pieces, especially in that front seven. The linebacker groom is really good. And they bring pressure from a lot of spots, try to confuse quarterbacks. And, again, that's the Clark Lee pedigree, right? It's just kind of what they've done. But, I think they take a bigger step back than maybe a lot of people are anticipating. I just think so much of their success was wrapped in having a generational player. Those are my feelings. You may feel differently, but that's how I feel. And I think they'll take a step back. But, hey, Clark Lee's not going anywhere, right? They're going to be a competitive team. But I could see them being, 7-5, something like that. Again, I think when you run the numbers, and especially when they weren't a great road team last year, they were 3-2, which we would live for that, right? We could have three road wins. But when you begin to think about how important that NC State game is, and it's in Nashville, to be 3-0 going into road trips to Auburn and Georgia, that's very significant. And then you host Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is going to be a good team. And so you could be in a situation at the halfway point that you're 3-3, and then you end up in November traveling the state, hosting Bama, Florida, Tennessee. I mean, you definitely could see how this could get away from them late. That's why it's so important for them to win games early. So I think 6-6, 7-5. I don't know what other people are projecting, but based on what they have returning defensively, that will keep them in some ball games. They just need this young quarterback not to try to do too much. Just be a caretaker of the offense, hand the football off, work some play action stuff, and make accurate throws down the field. So, yeah, I think they're a bowl team, but I think it's second tier this year. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. And why? Well, they got the stuff we want. We are not complicated people. If you just buy us Mississippi State gear, we're going to be happy because we love the Bulldogs and we love repping the Bulldog brand. So when it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't try to build a better mousetrap. Just buy us Mississippi State stuff. And the best place to buy Mississippi State merchandise is Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in town. Yeah, I get a complimentary hug when I make a purchase. Maybe that will happen for you too. Don't lean in first. Let them lean, right? But you'll feel like you had a nice internet hug if you buy online. Visit them at campusbookmart.net and use promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Yeah, absolutely incomplete. That's campusbookmart.net. All right, as projected, safety Kennedy Green chooses Mississippi State for the second time. Kennedy, of course, committed to State very early in his recruitment. It's one of those things, too, like you just don't even get too excited about out-of-state commitments that commit really before their junior year. That was the case for Kennedy. And his recruitment blew up. And let's just kind of run down just the offers here, just because, we've had a lot of problems with recruiting this year, and you needed something to celebrate. He is a 247 composite four-star. Hopefully he gets a little bump from 247, the network. He is just right at a 90 composite, just under a 90, 88 with the network. But finalists were South Carolina, North Carolina, Mississippi State. As you guys are well aware, he officially visited all those schools. Also, Auburn, Boston College, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Indiana, Kansas State, Kentucky, Louisville, Maryland, Miami, Michigan, Missouri, NC State, Nebraska, Ole Miss, Oregon, Pitt, Purdue, Stanford, Tennessee, Texas A&M, USC, Utah, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and many, many, many more. An outstanding get. And again, give Jeff Labby and those guys a lot of credit. When a guy decommits, a lot of times pride gets in the way. You're like, you know what? Hey, if he didn't want us, we don't want him, right? We don't want players that think they're too good to play at Mississippi State. Jeff Labby stayed on him and was personally involved in his recruitment. And he took the official visit the last weekend in June before the dead period and said then that Coach Lebby had told him, I'm going to continue to recruit you because we believe in you. When he came on his visit, Braylon Womack was his host. And, of course, Braylon Womack was the number four safety in America last year. And Braylon, you know, enrolled early, as you guys are well aware. And he kind of shared some of his experience with Kennedy. And said, hey, we kind of see you in the same light that we see Braylon. If it's good enough for Braylon, we think it's good enough for you. Well, Kennedy Green thought so as well. Absolutely outstanding effort, you know, last year at Douglas County, Georgia. And we look forward to seeing him, you know, this year. And so now the question is like, so kind of what's next? Well, I think it may be a little while. I thought that Deshaun Dillon may be leaning our way, and we still may get him. But Georgia Tech is offering him a chance to play both men's basketball and football. Now, you and I both know that's recruiting talk. It's almost impossible to do that. Number one, the calendar just doesn't work for you. But also, too, I mean, to play at this level in the Power Four, to play two high-impact sports like that, your body at some point just needs a rest. And so what will you do, you know, when you're playing basketball? And you got spring practice, you got meetings. There's a lot to take on. And as you saw with Brad Cumbest, right? Brad was playing baseball and football. And baseball is not high impact. A lot of intensity in it, but it's not physically as demanding as perhaps men's basketball is. And man, Brad was always broke up until he decided, hey, I'm not going to play football anymore. And he was a great football player, don't get me wrong. But he felt his future was in baseball, and it was so much. I remember talking to Brad. He said, man, every time I talked to him, he's like, dude, I'm just so tired. And that's the thing that you see. Physically, you will begin to break down trying to do both. That's what I think with Deshaun Dillon, but a lot of these guys think, well, I can do it because I've always done it. Well, it's just different when you make the move to the Power Four. But you say, well, why wouldn't State offer him the opportunity? Number one, I think he's a developmental receiver. And I don't know that we have a roster spot for him on men's basketball for next year. I don't even know if that's even part of the equation for us. And so, not that Chris Jans wouldn't help football. He obviously would. He would love to get the guy basically for free. But if there's not a roster spot, there's not a roster spot. And that's one of those things you have to kind of consider before you make a commitment to a young man. You better make sure that he understands what he's getting into. And I don't know if that's really the case for Deshaun Dillon, but that's, again, something that we'll continue to monitor. I have removed my crystal ball pick from his profile in favor of Mississippi State. If I were to pull one in today, I would pick Georgia Tech. He says he's going to decide at some point this month. We'll continue to stay in contact with him and just kind of see, but as of now, I think it's probably Georgia Tech. Then there's LaMarcus Jones. A guy that was leaning to Mississippi State basically throughout the process, went to Colorado basically on a visit just to take a visit somewhere cool, and committed there. And we've talked to him once, I guess, since a couple times since then. But he says he's probably going to have a final decision sometime in August before his senior season begins. You know, so we'll see how that plays out. But that's probably the only guys that I would look at right now of the Mississippi State targets that are going to decide before the season begins. And it's so interesting, too, to kind of go back and look. You know, when we're in the middle of all these official visits, you know, you don't always kind of understand how significant this stuff is. And as you look at it now, we had 34 official visitors. 32 of those 34 are committed to a program. One of those that's not is Deshaun Dillon. The other is Caleb Unger, of course, a young man that decommitted from Mississippi State. We think he's probably going to go to Tulane, but he'll work some things out. But you go back to that first weekend, you know, and now you look back in hindsight, the first weekend you got one of the nine. Got to have a better ratio. Dejon Yarbrough, I told you guys he wasn't coming. Yeah, he's committed to Cal. Figured he'd stay somewhere out west. He did. But looking up and down this list, man, it is just a wide assortment of players that went a variety of places. And not a lot of them necessarily close to home either. That's one of the things that's so interesting, is just kind of looking back at the first nine here. Noah Reynes, it was basically him or Brewer. We elected to go with Brewer. He went to Georgia Tech. We did get Jalen Kello. Devin Watkins is one of the only guys that stayed closer to home. He's going to Baylor. Makes a lot of sense. He's from Mesquite, Texas. Plays at Mesquite Poteet. And we'll go to Baylor. Makes a lot of sense. James Roberson, safety from Allen, Texas. Wisconsin. Doesn't make a lot of sense. That's what he's doing. Carter Davis, the guy that we liked a lot. Saw him play last year at Gulf Shores High School. Going to West Virginia. Aaron Williams, safety out of Fort Bend Ridgepoint, Missouri City, Texas. He's headed to North Carolina. Jason Lewis from Kissimmee, Florida, Syracuse. And DeJohn Yarbrough, of course, from Chandler, Arizona, going to Cal. And Frederick Ford from Greenwood, Mississippi, one that we're going to remain on, is going to Michigan. And so not a great ratio. We did much better the second weekend with 9, and we still may get one of those guys that's committed into the program. Of the 9, 5 of them are committed to us. The ones that aren't, Kyron Caldwell committed to Maryland. He wasn't a take for Bama. Judah Gums headed to Arkansas, Jalen Hill to Missouri. And then there's Kelsey Adams, 247 Sports 4-star, one of the most talented visitors we had on campus this summer, has visited 3 times and going to come back for some games. He's, quote, committed to Georgia, but he's still kind of looking around at some things. And then, of course, the final group, and we talked about the big group. We actually had 16 visitors that weekend, and Elijah Cox being one of them, who announced last Sunday for Ole Miss. You know, we were in it until the end, just couldn't get it done. But, you know, most of these guys are committed to us. Rontre Carter picked TCU, kind of a compromise with his mom. But the bulk of those 15 are headed to Mississippi State. Mitchell Turner and LaMarcus Jones, we will stay on. But that's your football recruiting update. And, again, it may be a while before you add to that class. And we're finally in the top 50 as it sits right now. And we just simply got to be better. We have to be better. And one of the things that I have learned about this staff is we are not going to overpay for high school guys in June. Now, we may go back and sharpen the pencil a little bit when we get closer to signing day and said, hey, we'd love to have you and make things a little more interesting. But there's a lot of kids out there that are like, yeah, I'm not gonna flip for that. But as it stands right now, we got 1 4-star, and we've got to do better. Now, we got some guys that are undervalued, but as far as 247 Sports 4-stars, we have 1, Christian Alexander. Looking forward to seeing him play early in the year. Kennedy Green is your 4th highest rated player in the class. And people ask me, well, you know, who could potentially move up? Well, there's a lot of guys, but we got to see the senior film. There's some guys towards the back end of this that kind of irritate me a little bit when I think about kind of how they're rated. Trey Collins is probably the guy that bothers me the most. It doesn't make any sense to me that he has dropped so much. To kind of look at the 247 stuff, right? Because that's one of the things that, you know, that I don't necessarily have a lot of influence over, but I can recommend that a guy get reevaluated. He has been an 85 with 247 Sports since the beginning of this process. And as a guy that saw him play last year against Canton High School, that's just not correct. It's just not correct. It isn't. Now, I don't care what anybody says or does. Is the only one of us that's seen him play? I'll tell you, he's better. And now he's headed off to Terry High School. But in the 247 Sports composite, which includes what everybody has, he was an 89. I mean, right there pushing to be a potential 4-star. He moved up to an 89.72. So, I mean, just a fraction away from being a 4-star in the composite. And now he has dropped 1.6 all the way down to an 88.12. And that's not 247 manipulating the rankings. That's other people that have decided he's not quite as good. Aiden Coleman's a guy that we believed in for a long time. Thought he was great. Yeah. And, you know, 247 ranks him as an 86, and that's where he sits. But, you know, this is a guy, too. You look at the offer sheet and you watch the film and you feel like, you know what, that may be a tad low. You know, it's better than what we've got Collins. And for that matter, I think it's better. You know, Nash Morgan's another one that's probably not getting his due. And so as we get senior film, we will look to get some of these guys evaluated. But that's not going to excuse the fact that we need to be better at recruiting. Period. We need to be better. And there are things we can do better, but nothing means more than winning football games. You got to make sure people understand you're going to be here next year and that things are trending in the right direction. So incredibly important. You know, your messaging has to match your results. You can't sit here and say, you know, after three losing seasons, we're on the right track. You might be able to say it, but it's disingenuous. We've got to show evidence on the field. And I reiterate that all the time, because the only way that you're going to get some guys to kind of give you a second look is you got to go out there and make things happen on the football field. You got to surprise some people. You got to upset some people. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you bring a large group to town, and you should, yeah? We've done it, had a great time. You should too. You know, get the family together, the cousins together, the college roommates, whatever your friend group or family group that you want to spend some special time with, reach out to them and say, hey, I'm going to book us a spot, and I'm going to go pick the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Let's start checking dates, right? You can be the linchpin in that friend or family group to make that happen. Six bedrooms, two, soon to be three baths. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Incredible, man. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, Facebook page comes up. You can peruse pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, like that full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, which is fabulous. Sit out there, watch the sunset. And, of course, the fire pit area. Plenty of parking there, too. When you do that Google search, you're also going to see some booking options. You can work through Airbnb or Vrbo, completely up to you. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR and the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to the show. It didn't have to be a ball game weekend. You can do it in the midweek. It's open 365 days a year. But if you are thinking about ball game weekends, you need to act fast, and you may want to even think about basketball weekends when you know, maybe things aren't so much hustle and bustle. But I would encourage you to stay there. We had an absolutely grand time. It is a better facility than the pictures could even illustrate to you. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none. All right, told you guys that got to go to court in the morning, and I haven't had to go to a criminal court proceeding in years. Some civil stuff when I've been the plaintiff or as a witness, but it's been a while since I've had to go. And so my attorney sent me these questions for my direct examination, all that kind of stuff, because this is a district where they're not going to rubber stamp this kind of stuff, nor should they, right? Those people don't know me, right? They may know who I am, but the truth of the matter is, I haven't been to that court in forever, and that district is the one that sentenced me, and showed up in a suit back in those days, and was very honest and forthright, and I was caught, right? And the reality of it is I'm a firm believer is, you know, you just kind of take your lick. You know, you want to get the best deal possible, right? And I was a first-time offender, at least they know of. That's a joke. But my point being in all this stuff is, as I shared with you guys on the last show, there are some things you continue to have to deal with in life. One of the things that I will share with you about that is that we are the pilot, not the passenger. But there are some times that we have to depend on the mercy of someone else. And as my lawyer, Casey Lott, who many of you guys know, he said, Steve, you are the absolute textbook definition of rehabilitation. That's one of the things that I wanted to talk about in the final moments we had today. Not about me being an example, but about you being an example. No matter what you're dealing with, no matter what you've dealt with, you can overcome that. Like, I, to be honest with you, I get a little offended, and maybe I shouldn't, but when people say, you know, hey, Steve was a survivor, I haven't survived anything. Not really. I've overcome a lot. You know, surviving is about luck, right? And you can't go through your life hoping to get lucky, period. You can't. You've got to have some gumption. You've got to push ahead to yourself. And I had a discussion recently about working in this industry. And somebody said, you know, Steve, you've been doing this 30 years. And it doesn't seem like you're slowing down. And I'm not. I mean, the fact that I got up today and immediately went to work and wrote a draft preview and then covered a draft all day. We had to, you know, change some stories around guys that we thought may get drafted, didn't, get quotes from them, get done with that, interview Brian O'Connor, get that story up, write the draft notebook to run in the morning, and then do the show, right? Not that I feel the need to give you my resume, but, you know, life is what you make it, right? But when it comes to, like, working in this industry, like, somebody asked me to be point blank with them and be real direct because they're struggling a little bit. And one of the things that I can say is acknowledging that you're struggling, that you may need a little direction, is progress within itself. Because some people are incredibly egotistical, and admitting failure is just kind of beyond them. And there have been times in my life I've been that way too. But when I'm struggling, right, I reach out to my mentors. But anyway, this person reached out to me, and I said, one of the things you got to ask yourself is, what do you want from all this? What do you want? And this is really to you guys too. Like, what do you want out of life, career, family, whatever? I'm a person at times that has been accused of having main character energy. And I think part of that is because a lot of the times in life I have been the main character. Whether it be, you know, being in a supervisory role with a business or, you know, leading my family. Everybody plays a part, and it's important to understand that. And I would not be where I am today without the help of so many people. But one of the things you have to ask yourself is, am I good enough to reach my goals? And be incredibly honest with yourself about that. And there were times in my life I couldn't be honest about that. I thought I was good enough, but not to be where I wanted to be within this industry. I was better than other people, but I wasn't good enough. I mean, we're talking 30 years now, right? You don't stay in this industry for 30 years by accident. You got to have some hard work and some gumption behind you. But I asked him, I said, do you think you're good enough to achieve your goals? Well, yeah, man. I said, well, take me through it, right? And so as they began to talk about certain things, I said, hey, I agree that you're talented and I agree that you're smart, but I don't know that you have the wisdom required to pull this off. And that's where I'm going to help you a little bit. Here is what I would do. And here is what we're going to do, right? And so you detail that out for people. And sometimes what is required is so incredibly exhaustive to people. They just think, you know what, I'm just happy being good enough rather than being great. And days like today, when you spend all day at a computer screen and now you're here at a microphone, you got to get up early, that is what excellence requires. And most people are not going to put forth that effort, and they just hope you don't notice. Because in your mind, you're like, that's good enough, right? In their minds, it's good enough too. But if we always accept just good enough, will anything ever be great? And the answer to that is no. If you're willing to accept a mediocre effort and you're going to get a mediocre result, then let's not talk about great, right? Again, if you're good enough to reach the goals, then you've got to find the work ethic to make it happen. If you don't have the talent, right, we've got to figure some other things out. What are you willing to do to improve? Right? How are you willing to challenge yourself? Because right now, if you don't have the skill set and you don't have the talent, what maybe can we develop? You know, is there a skill that maybe if we began to pursue some other activities that we can be better? Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to work on the issues where you're deficient? And there's a lot of people that don't do that. Now, one of the things that I have tried to do in my professional career is I've tried to hire people that are not necessarily in my image. You got to have some people like that. You have to have some people that are mutually aligned. You got to have some hitters on the squad, right? But there was a young lady that worked for me years ago named Judy Imler. my hometown. I don't even know if Judy's still alive. I hope she is. But Judy was so incredibly strong where I was weak. And it taught me a lot about life and about managing people. Because if you hire and fire and promote in your own image, then you don't have people that have maybe complementary skill sets. That's what happens. It's like if everybody was like me, if everybody woke up like it's the Lord of the Flies, right? Ready to just charge up the mountain and go fight the beast. If everybody did that, there's nobody to mine camp, right? There's nobody to build the shelter. There's nobody to go gather firewood, right? So you have to have some balance in what you're doing. You can't go out there and just hire everybody and say, hey, let's just go get them, right? You know, one of the things that I appreciate about some of the guys that work for me is that I know they're never going to have a 7 or 8 story day. But you know what? I can count on 2 to 3 stories every single day. They're going to be of quality and they're going to be very consistent in what they do. And consistency is so important, you know, and we've written double digit stories every day now for 19 months. And it was just something one day I just woke up and I was like, you know, we could be doing more. Why aren't we doing more? Well, nobody's going to do more if you don't ask for more, if you don't demand more. But more importantly, if you don't lead, right? What nobody wants to work for the guy that says, hey, we have to do this, and then they do the least. I do the most. Nobody writes more. Nobody works more. Nobody spends more hours on that website than I do. And it's one of those things that's reflective. Other people have told me, I just don't want to let you down. I see how hard you work, and I don't want to let you down. And it means a lot to me to hear that. But the rest of that story is I don't want to let them down, right? They have hitched their wagon to me. And so when I say onward ho, I'm not doing that from the back. And so I think that's one of those things, whether it's professionally or personally or whatever we're dealing with, it's so important to lead from the front. It's so important to show people that, hey, nothing is beneath me. If I got to get out here and I got to go write a recruiting story on this kid, or I've got to go do this, or I've got to go aggregate some news, which I hate having to do, but sometimes you have to. You know, it's just like when I was in the retail furniture business, and I loved that industry. I couldn't have had this haircut back then or all these tattoos, but I couldn't wait for like some kid to throw up in the lobby or somebody to go mess up the bathroom. I couldn't wait for that because I wanted to go do it myself, because it's illustrating to the rest of the employees, if it's not beneath him, it's not beneath me, right? Those kinds of things are important. And I used to always, when I worked in Natchitoches, and I loved living in Natchitoches, Dan and I's first house that we ever bought was in Natchitoches, Louisiana. My house is in a pecan orchard at 104 Watson Drive there off of Highway 6, I guess it is. And there were so many mornings, I loved it so much, I would walk to work because I ran that furniture store, you know, right there. The Trail Boss was right there. I used to love going to the Trail Boss, but I just lived a couple blocks away. And it was so nice, and Natchitoches was so great. It's where they filled Steel Magnolias. And I would just walk to work because I loved it. I loved being close to home. I loved being close to work. I loved being part of that community. But I would always be there first. And then when everybody showed up, the coffee was already made. Sometimes I had donuts. But everything that was needed to be done that day was already printed out. I had already walked the store and had my list of things to go over with people in their sections. Hey, we got to replace this price tag. We got to do this. We got a sale coming up, and this is going to be on sale. I'd do all that stuff first. Because if it is to be, it's up to me, right? That's what leadership is. And it doesn't matter if it's work or at home. And that's one of the things, like I have so many things around here that I need to get done. But there are some things I always like to surprise Dana because she's an acts of service person. There's some things like I don't want her to have to do. That's part of my day every day. And then when I have those days that I can't quite get to as much of that as I want to, I always feel a little bit guilty. But I know that she recognizes the effort and how hard that I work. And so I just wanted to share that so much with you and hope that maybe it inspires you to maybe do a little something more. You know, one of the things, somebody asked me one day, one of these couples things that you go to, you know, what's the most important thing to me when it comes to my marriage? Like, what do I want to do for her? I said, the number one thing that I want to do is make her life easier. It's the number one thing that I want to do is make her life easier. Because life is hard, right? And coming home shouldn't be hard. Coming home, you should be feel like I'm welcomed. And this will sound like a small thing to you guys, but it's not to me. And it's really only started, I guess, in the last year. We eat dinner late a lot. Some days I'll just go eat it with her at the spa, I'll pick it up, and we'll go eat at the spa. But we have a different schedule than most people. And but, you know, my dogs let me know when she's coming down the driveway. And I always make it a point to come down and get the food and the drinks out of the car so she doesn't have to. Not that she's not capable, but, you know, she usually has her purse and her phone and everything else. And, of course, there's these handful of dogs that are happy to greet her. They'd love for her to drop some food on the floor, right, even though they eat like nobody I've ever seen. But my point being is that's a very simple thing. And I did it without her even asking me. I just started doing it. And even the nights that she doesn't bring dinner home, we've already eaten or whatever, I still go down to greet her when she comes home. And I have noticed over the course of this year or so that every time that she comes, I get a smile. Like, she'll get out of the car and it's like, hey, babe. What does it hurt me to make those extra few steps and just to greet her when she comes home? It's just one of those things, too. It sticks with me. I think to myself, why haven't I always done this, right? And maybe it's just being an empty nester that I recognize the need for it. So I share that with you, whether you're married or dating or whatever. If we could all kind of, you know, just kind of make each other's lives easier, like, wonder how many relationships we'd save if we operated with that in mind. That's just, I think it's one of those things that I wish somebody had told me that when I was 20, right? Because in the beginning, you know, my mom took care of everything when I was a kid. Like, I never had to do laundry or clean the kitchen, none of that, nothing. I'd do some yard work. I never had to do anything in the house because my mom was a housewife. She took care of everything. Everything was always the way it should be. Like, there'd be sometimes that, like, the clothes that I wore yesterday, when I got home from school, would already be back in the closet or back in the dresser, because she was so on top of it. And so I had to kind of learn to handle all that stuff, you know, when I got married. I did. And in the beginning, you just kind of assume, oh, well, she'll take care of it, you know. And that's just old school ideology. But whether it's doing some laundry, which, you know, I do a lot of that here too. But the reality of it is, the way that I look at it, anything that I can do to help her, and it's not just necessarily helping her, it's doing my part, you know. It's not helping, it's carrying part of the load. But the reality of it is there's so much in life that we could handle if we just kind of communicated and put the other person first. And I know that's absolutely inversely proportional to what they tell you on social media. You got to take care of you. You've got to always put yourself first. I have just found the happiest times in my life are when I have put her or my children first, right? And there's a lot of people that do it, you know, oh, my world, my on their Instagram, whatever. They don't mean that stuff. It's just social custom. So I appreciate you guys more than I could ever express. And again, it's been a long day, so I'm looking forward to finishing up. We'll get the show uploaded. And we're getting to bed early, and we got an early rise, and we got to make a drive down south. And as I share with you guys too, I expect this to go my way, but if it doesn't, my life isn't going to change. Like, I'm not going to come home and be all depressed and down in the mouth. I'm just going to accept that is how life has to be, period. Do I think that I should still be paying for something that I did when I was 19 years old? Absolutely not. But that's not my call. I'm going to get in there and say what I need to say. But the reality of it is, you know, life is life. And sometimes you got to learn to live life on life's terms. And sometimes that may not be the way that we want it to be. But the path is the path. And let's be grateful for the time that you spend on it and the people that you spend walking with. If you haven't done so, visit DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles. That includes Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, The Dog Pile, and The Dude, plus the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. And join us at True Rest Float Spa, Starville, 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana, and get any questions you have about floating answered. She can get you on the schedule, and you'll find that I actually married really, really well. Very proud of her. And the fact that she has basically built this building, this business from nothing to a very thriving business, even in the summer months in a college town. So incredibly proud of her. Come see what all the fuss is about and come join us over at jeanspage.com. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.